The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome to IMC. So for this morning's talk, I want to tell a story. And so maybe it's like a fireside chat or, you know. It's an ancient fable from the Buddhist texts. And it's from, those of you interested in knowing where it's from, it's the shorter discourse on the destruction of craving. So it's in the middle-length discourse, number 37. And it starts off with the ruler of the gods, a man named Sakka, coming down to the Buddha to ask him a profound question. And he says, "Venerable sir, how in brief..." So he wants a brief response. Maybe if you're ruler of the gods, you're probably busy. And so it's good to get things done, you know, in brief. "How in brief is a person liberated in the destruction of craving? And how does one reach the ultimate end, the ultimate freedom from bondage, the ultimate goal, and become foremost among gods and humans?" So here he's asking a question about how do you reach the end? How do you reach the ultimate goal that the Buddha had to teach? It's often described as the destruction or the end of craving. So the Buddha gives an answer that's, you know, it's a little bit lengthy, but the first line is very evocative and sometimes is taught just by itself as a little slogan. And that's, he says, "Here..." And I love when the Buddha says, he uses the word "here," it often implies something immediate, like, you know, like we can do it now. So it's not something abstract, like, oh, someday, somewhere, someplace, a person could do this. But now, here. "Here, a person, here, a person has heard that nothing is worth adhering to. When a person has heard that nothing is worth adhering to, the person directly knows everything. Having fully known, understood everything, the person can become liberated." So then it goes on and explains more how this works. But the slogan, "nothing is worth adhering to," sometimes it's translated into English as "nothing is worth clinging to," which is a little bit more evocative for some people. And it's a wonderful kind of slogan to carry with you as a challenge, because from time to time you probably find yourself clinging to things. And then the slogan, "nothing is worth clinging to," is meant to be, can be a challenge then for you to grapple with that, because you think it's really important what you're clinging to. And you have to cling to it, and you know, everything depends on it. And you have good reason to cling. And so this question, this slogan is like, well, let's look at it. Is it really the case? Maybe it's not true. Maybe you're better off not clinging to anything. And how could that be true? When there's so many important things that have to be done and accomplished for your safety, your well-being, for that of your friends and family and society, how could it be that not clinging is better than clinging? And if I don't cling, then everything will just unravel and fall apart, and my clinging holds it all together. So it's a very powerful statement. Nothing is worth adhering to. The word that's being translated here is adhering, abhinivesana, doesn't kind of means adhering. It's a little hard to know how to translate these ancient words into English. It more literally means to abide in, to dwell in. And so sometimes we have the expression in English that if someone is preoccupied with something, they're thinking about something, they're dwelling in their thoughts. They're dwelling in the past or dwelling in the future or their plans. And it has a little more of that meaning of dwelling or abiding in. It, etymologically, it means to enter into. So like enter into a home or something. And so clinging is given how the story unfolds, it doesn't make sense to say nothing's worth clinging to, But it has a kind of a wider, deeper meaning than clinging. Because also this word also means not adhering to philosophical views. A translation that I like, especially given the story, is preoccupied. Nothing is worth being preoccupied with. And perhaps most of your clinging would be overcome if you're not preoccupied by things. So what are you preoccupied by? So I want to tell the story, how it unfolds, and then at the end of the story, the Buddha repeats his teachings that he gave. And so I have a chance to go through this a little bit more in detail then. So Sakka says, "Great, thank you," and goes back. And then goes back to his heavenly realms. And but there's a monk in the audience named Mahamoggallana who saw all this, and he was wondering, how well did Moggallana hear what the Buddha had to teach? Did he really hear the teaching and take it in? So Mahamoggallana decides to go visit Sakka up in the heavenly realms. So since he's a very good meditator, he just snapped his fingers and appeared up there. And he says, as quickly as a strong person might flex the arms or unflex the arms, the Venerable Mahamoggallana vanished from this earth and appeared among the gods. Now on that occasion, Sakka, the ruler of the gods, was furnished and endowed with 100-fold kinds of heavenly music. And he was enjoying it in the pleasure park of the single lotus. So this guy is living a life of luxury. A pleasure park, it's probably every kind of pleasure that a god is allowed to have is happening in hundreds and fold kinds of music and everything. So it's a pretty, pretty nice thing. And he was there enjoying himself, which is a nice thing. But when he saw Mahamoggallana appear, he dismissed the musicians and welcomed him. "Come, come. It's great that you had the opportunity to come visit us. Thank you." So then Mahamoggallana sat down and he asked him, "When you asked the Buddha to give a brief answer to your question about the destruction of craving, what did he tell you?" So it's really a test to see if he remembered, if he took it seriously. So remember, the Buddha said, nothing is worth being preoccupied with. So then the great God says, "Good sir, Moggallana, we are so busy. We have so much to do, not only with our own business, but also with the business of the gods of the 33 other heavens. Besides, good sir Moggallana, what was well heard, well learned, well attended to, well remembered, suddenly vanished from us. Good sir, it once happened that a war broke out between the gods and the titans." Titans are a different kind of gods. "In that war, the gods won and the titans were defeated. When I had won that war and returned from it as conqueror, I had the great palace built. Good sir Moggallana, the great palace has 100 towers, and each tower 700 upper chambers, and each upper chamber has 7 nymphs." So nymphs, I guess, it's kind of, we shouldn't anymore kind of choose one gender over the other, over all the different kind of genders we could have. So maybe is nymph a gender-neutral term? No? Nymphs and nymphers? I don't know. What? We'll dwell on it? Don't dwell on it. Just go on. Anyway, so I apologize for these old languages, but anyway. Each tower had 700 chambers, and each chamber has 7 nymphs, and each nymph has 7 maids. "Would you like to see the loveliness of the palace, good sir?" So that's his answer to the question. What was it the Buddha said to you in brief about the end of craving? He starts off saying, "I'm busy." But he was just hanging out in this pleasure park. And then he invites him to go see, you know, his wonderful palace and everything. So apparently, Sakka is preoccupied. Apparently, he didn't take in what he heard for himself. He's, you know, quite preoccupied. He's dwelling in his pleasures and his preoccupations, his concerns. He's clinging, he's adhering. And Mahabhagyata takes him up for the tour of the palace, and they go around. And when they finish, Mogliana says, he thought this, "This god is living much too negligently. What if I stir up a sense of urgency in him?" So he took his toe and he touched the palace floor or something, cuts the palace, to make an earthquake. And that got Sakya's attention. Sakya said, "It's wonderful, it's marvelous what power and might this monk has, that with the point of his toe he makes the heavenly region shake and quake and tremble." So something, it took an earthquake or a heavenquake to get Sakya's attention. And this is also kind of interesting. What does it take to get our attention? And some people, it takes some kind of major event sometimes to kind of shake us up and feel like time is short. We better kind of address the issues of our life. If we wanted to, I hear a lot of people come to me and say, you know, something happens in their life and they say, you know, "I realize I can't wait anymore. I've been wanting to do a spiritual practice for a long time. And, you know, if I'm not going to do it now, then when?" But it took something, something had to happen. And so many of us have a wake-up call of something, some event, an accident or an illness or, a variety of things that can happen. And so it took that to get this preoccupied ruler of the gods' attention. So then Mogliana asked the question again, "What did the Buddha teach you?" And it turns out he had memorized it, he remembered it, so maybe just hadn't taken it to heart. So then he recited it to Mahabhagyana. Mahabhagyana went back to the Buddha then, on earth, and said, "I was just up there, and this is what the ruler of the gods said." And the Buddha said, "Yes, that's accurate. He came here, this is the questions he asked, and this is what I said. So nothing is worth adhering to, or nothing is worth being preoccupied by, nothing is worth clinging to, perhaps." And so then Buddha repeated this, the full teaching. When a person has heard that nothing is worth adhering to, one directly knows everything. That's quite a statement. One directly knows everything. Why is that, knowing everything? My understanding is that you know something about everything. You don't know everything in the universe, but you know a common denominator of everything. And to have access to the kind of common denominator or root issue or some kind of thing that's relevant in all domains of life is quite a powerful piece of knowledge. So that's how it, so he knows, so it's saying, when if you know that nothing is worth adhering to, you know something significant that's relevant everywhere you go. So you know something about everything. So that's also kind of evocative, the idea that it's portable, that it's, you know, it's really universal. Nothing is worth clinging to. You're better off not clinging, being preoccupied. Having fully understood everything in this way, whatever feeling one feels, whether it's pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, one abides aware of how it's impermanent, how it's changing, how it's in flux. And here it's the idea of seeing the impermanence of something, the changing nature of it, is offered as an alternative to being preoccupied by something. And in the Buddhist psychology, things have much more semblance of permanence when we're preoccupied, when we're caught up in concepts and ideas and we're thinking about it, as opposed to being in direct contact with it. And over again, the emphasis in Buddhism is the direct contact, direct experience of the moment. And in the moment, things are actually shifting and changing all the time for no other, for many reasons, but for one reason, our experience is changing because our vantage point, our perspective, our understanding, our what we're focusing on is constantly shifting and changing. And things are always in flux, always changing. And for me, that's become a refuge in many, many situations. When I remind myself, this is in process of changing right now. Let's hang out and just see how it changes. And so many times when I'm willing to let the situation unfold, things become clear, things become easier, things that are... I usually use that little kind of tool when things are challenging. So let's see how it changes. When things are good, I don't often say that. But when things are going difficult, and then sure enough, if I hang in there as opposed to, you know, call the fire department right away, you know, and that, maybe that was a bad analogy, but the idea of, you know, let's see how it goes, how it unfolds. So see the impermanence of it. And as we see the changing nature of things, then what begins to fade away, ideally, or as the suggestion here, is the preoccupation, is the craving or the clinging. Craving requires a sense of holding on to something in a fixed way. If we're attuned into the facts of how everything is changing, it softens, it's like a massage that loosens the grip. And there's a fading away of our preoccupation. And then as it fades away and we get disinterested in it, at some point there's this moment that can occur. In this text it's called relinquishment, which is a very mature step in, I think, any spiritual life. And that is not only to let go or see the value of letting go, of releasing, fading away, but making a choice. And the choice is, I'm done with this. I'm no longer interested in this. This is not something I'm really, you know, want to dwell in, reside in, be involved in. I might not be able to let go of it so easily, because letting go is, it can be very tenacious, but there can be a clear sense, I'm done with this. In my heart, I don't want to do this anymore. And I think coming to a place where we make that choice is very important, because too often it's too easy to just kind of think that if I just keep being mindful, everything will take care of itself. Which it kind of will sometimes, but I think to make a choice, you know, I'm done with this. I'm gossiping all the time. I'm done with gossiping. I'm being cynical all the time. I'm done, you know. I'll probably still do it, it's a habit, but I feel done. Or, you know, all kinds of things. So, contemplating in this way, one does not cling to anything in the world. When one does not cling, one is not agitated. And this is also a very interesting statement, that if you don't cling, you won't be agitated. So something about that, apparently for the Buddha, agitation is caused by clinging to something. So if you don't cling, you don't get agitated. Some people think that they can be wiser in the world if they're not agitated. So it's one of the reasons why it's helpful not to cling to anything. Not agitated. When one is not agitated, one personally attains nibbana. One personally attains freedom. So, ending of clinging, settling of agitation, and then a certain kind of freedom arises. So, nothing is worth being preoccupied. It's not worth taking up residency in any kinds of preoccupation. It's interesting in the Buddhist tradition that a person is defined by where their mind dwells. So if we dwell in anger, that anger defines the person as an angry person. If we dwell in kindness, that defines the person as a kind person. If we dwell in fear, then that defines us. If we dwell in shopping, then that, you know, defines us. You know, whatever it is, you know, it kind of defines us. But a person who doesn't dwell, doesn't take up residency, doesn't have an address. And someone who's free doesn't get defined by something because their mind doesn't dwell anywhere. They can still be kind. Enlightened people tend to be helpful in the world. But there's something about their mind where they don't dwell in even the kindness. They don't dwell in the love. They don't dwell in, you know, generosity. Their mind is not taking up residence, not preoccupied by it. And so there's nothing that nothing, you can't define that mind. That heart can't be defined. In the ancient world, they say that God, people like gods, they have some like psychic ability to look into people's minds or hearts. But when they look into the mind and heart of someone who's enlightened, they can't see anything. There's nothing there that defines them. There's a kind of just clarity, just openness, freedom. Freedom is not something that can be seen. Because like clinging, when we don't cling, it's kind of like there's nothing there. But it's an absence which is very meaningful. It's an absence which can feel sublime when we don't cling, even though nothing's there. I have kind of an injury in my foot, so periodically it flares up, and when I walk, it troubles me. But yesterday I went for a hike, and both feet, the one that usually hurts and the one that doesn't, didn't hurt. So it was nice. But the one that usually hurts felt sublime. Just the absence of the usual pain. Wow, that's something. So the absence of clinging is sublime. It's freedom. Even if the gods can't read your mind, it's pretty good. So nothing is worth adhering to. Nothing is worth being preoccupied with. There are many things to cling to. The Buddha's, because it kind of specializes in studying this, so there's long lists of wonderful clingings. Maybe next week we can talk about the different kinds of clingings. But what I'd like to do now, before we end and have the potluck, is I want to pose a question, and that is, what benefit, what positive experience, have you had with having been preoccupied by something and then being free to the preoccupation? What do you know about how that feels? The freedom from preoccupation. What's that like for you? What's that feel like for you? What's that experience like? And this is not the time to tell a long story, but more the felt sense, you know, just even if just a few words, what that's like to no longer be preoccupied by something. Great. Thank you.